welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note to indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. There's a lot of speechifying this political season, some of it in the form of harsh words and tough rhetoric. Then again, there is the speechmaking that occurs away from the candidates. At Ball State, for instance, dozens of student speakers recently attended the 47th annual Age of Aquarius Forensics Tournament, hosted by Ball State and Illinois State University. Ball State's Mary Moore is an instructor of communication studies and director of the speech team. We talked about how technology has affected public speaking.
I would actually argue what we're doing is perhaps even more challenging today than it was when we were just an only oral society. You have to be better in a speaking environment than somebody's cell phone or a video because there's other ways to deliver that information. So the burden of a speaker to maintain an audience captive for 10 minutes is much higher today than it was perhaps when I was in college in the early 90s when we didn't have the World Wide Web. And so accessing information was often received in a speaking format, but now there's so many other ways to get that same information easy.
Is this similar to teachers sort of had a harder job after Robin Williams made the movie?
Yes, absolutely.
So, but some things are sort of eternal, right? Connecting with an audience.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's about the preparation that is required. And so our students work with, we have an 8-member coaching staff at Ball State. So between 3 faculty members and 5 graduate assistants, these students spend hours, sometimes 10 to 20 hours a week, working on their individual events, some on their own, but often with individual coaches. And these students have to choose topics that they're passionate about, topics that students or like the community hasn't heard a lot about, so they have to be sort of cutting edge, innovative sort of topics, and then they spend an enormous amount of time refining those subjects and really focusing on elocution and making sure that every element of the presentation is perfected. And for us, they are not only good speakers, but by choosing to get involved in an activity that is so demanding, it transforms these students in ways. They're exposed to topics and ideas perhaps they had never confronted or even considered in a very complex way because their audience is being judged by primarily individuals who have their PhDs or graduate students who, as you can imagine, are happy to be critics and offer feedback.
Students grow in this kind of, by doing this activity. How do you see that in that?
Yeah, I would say most of our recent graduates would describe their experience, not just in our program, but I would think in most programs in the country, as transformative. They are different people because of their participation in this.
Why is that?
I think part of it is
you get better at presenting yourself.
You're probably better at
applying for a job or
absolutely. But I think setting the stage really high, and then having to work for large goals. So if you want to be perhaps the best persuasive speaker in the whole country, or one of the top speakers of the 1,200 people that attend the national tournament, in order to do that, you have to be committed the same way as if you were going to try to be the best college football player. And so I would think by choosing to make this a large part of your college experience, when you get up at 4 a.m. to get ready to leave for a tournament, it's very different than a lot of college students' experiences are. And so you learn professionalism, you learn cooperation, you really learn to take constructive criticism, because all of those hours with your coaches are really them telling you what you're doing wrong and ways to fix it. And that's humbling. It's humbling.
Can you think in recent years of topics that impressed you or you thought, well, that's novel, I like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So last year we had 2 different events that made it to the national final round. One of those events was a persuasive speech, and she talked about how universities were being compliant with Title IX expectations of sexual assault on campus. So that decision had been made the summer before the school year started. And so a lot of schools became compliant through tutorials that students would have to take in order to educate themselves. And her position was that if we are really interested in stopping sexual assault on college campuses, a click-through tutorial where you can Google the answers is really irresponsible. So that topic was very timely. It was something that she cared very, very much about. She worked with sexual assault. She was a sexual assault advocate on campus, and she was the social justice chair on student government. So she chose a topic that she cared about, a topic that was relevant to the audience, but was different than just that sexual assault was happening on college campuses, which I think a lot of people had perhaps heard. Instead, it was more of a critique of the way in which we were, you know, trying to solve the problem.
You mentioned a minute ago persuasion theory.
Mm-hmm.
So this is studied, how people's minds are changed, and that factors into the coaching that you give the students?
Yeah, I would say almost everything that we most of the decisions that we make are informed in some sort of capacity, you know, through, you know, either tried practices that have worked in the past or, you know, or theoretical sort of understanding of persuasion or of argumentation or, you know, quality of evidence, those sorts of things.
There's so much material available on the web today. I'm thinking if you wanted to see the text of just about any major speech, you could probably find it. In the courses that you teach, are there any milestones that you point to? Let's examine this. I'm going to show you a really successful speech. Are there any that you all hold up as?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in the classroom speeches where you talk about, you know, political communication or those sorts of things. I mean, obviously, you would probably talk about some classic speeches as well as
Churchill
more modern.
Or Sweat, Blood, and Tears.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And you know, more recently, I mean, you might talk about some of Ronald Reagan's speeches after the Challenger blew up, and in 2004, the speech that Barack Obama gave to the Democratic National Convention that launched his career seems to be a recent example. And then, you know, there's his presidency has a number of recent examples. Most recently, you know, Michelle Obama's, you know, her response to some of the discourse that's happening in this presidential election and videos that were released, those sorts of things, I think really capture how important public speaking is still today, even though there are other ways in which to communicate your message.
So a big part of this, it sounds like from what you're saying, in order to be successful, you can't be talking about something that everyone else has. So
yeah, absolutely. Primarily, we look for either literature or topics that have been introduced in this calendar year. So primarily, you know, things that are related to, you know, 2016 sorts of issues. You can talk about issues that perhaps people are familiar with, but in a way that perhaps it expands it or it challenges it in ways that perhaps we didn't know before. So, you know, common subjects that a lot of people would talk about at the dinner table or among friends usually aren't the most competitive of choices.
Ball State's Mary Moore, instructor of communication studies and director of the speech team. Ball State recently hosted the 47th annual Age of Aquarius Forensics Tournament with Illinois State University. Ball State won the national tournament last year, and they've won 9 national titles in the last 5 years. Coming up, a crowded poetry slam at a restaurant near campus, and a young poet talks about his craft.
Indiana Weekend, interesting people and places from across our region. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
My name is Parker Pickett. I am at Reacting Out Loud, which is in Two Cats Cafe in the Village in Muncie. I will be reading a little bit of my poem that I'm going to read tonight, entitled, Is This the End? I, in the end, we'll be sitting crisscrossed in an open field of soft, vibrant green grass, with the clouds pure and comforting, with the sky a euphoric sweet Indian summer blue sky, without clothes, naked except for beard and hair, with a budding flower in front of me. As I sit there, facing west, and the flower tastes life, and the flower spreads its lemon yellow petals wide, and I smile, and there is unity, and I say, love. And there is no more.
How long have you been doing this?
Well, taking it seriously about 3-4 years now, actually. Ever since a year of high school. I'm 23 right now. I've been traveling a little bit. I've got a book published and just write all the time, I guess. It's what I just do. So that's.
Is this something you're studying in school as well?
Yeah, I'm started this year, actually, back up to school, freshman, literature. But I'm having second thoughts. I just don't feel like it's for me. So I need to get back out there and just write and read in different places, different cities, enjoy it more. So right now I'm still in school, but probably not soon.
Have your jobs or other experiences had an impact on your writing?
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, the jobs helped me fund just traveling and writing and getting all that stuff done. But it also just helped me learn different aspects of life than just writing. So I did construction for about 2.5 years, and now I work at Lowe's, which helped, you know, that job helped me get to this job. I enjoy physical stuff, physical labor. I did sports in high school, and it helps me get understanding of people who don't really do art things, I guess you could say. So non-musicians, non-poets, non-artists, painters, it kind of gets a working class feel. Yeah, and worked at other little jobs, janitor, a bunch of other things, getting different perspectives from different people.
You have a notebook in your hand? You write all the time?
Yeah. This is last year I filled 8 of these things, believe it or not. I've taken a break. I'm doing more short stories right now, but still writing, still having fun.
Where are you from?
I'm from Anderson, Indiana, so basically homegrown. You know, it's 30 minutes due west of here. So
you've suffered for your art?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. A little bit. I've been homeless in D.C. for a couple days, waiting on a bus. You know, I got a bus ticket, and I spent all my money on a bus ticket to get back. Seen friends do some stupid things, experienced loved ones do stupid things, go through bad things. Personally, we've gone through bad things, but it's all worth it in the end, I'd say.
Poetry helps you. Sometimes people say there's a therapeutic thing to it, or you just have to. The word's got to come out.
100% accurate, at least to me. I mean, other people might do it for other means, but it's therapeutic. I'm not really good with speaking, per se, I guess, to people one-on-one. I'm better at writing out and being exact in how I want to say it. And then speaking out in front of a lot of people, you get to show the emotion of the writing instead of just writing it down and waiting, like putting it on the shelf. You get to share it with people. There are two things with that. You know, you get to get your emotions out, and other people get to connect and also can help get them at ease with whatever they're going through.
And a poetry slam is, how is it different from just readings?
So reading is, there's just poets, they go up there and read. It's not a competition. Everyone's there just to enjoy it. You know, it's kind of more experimental. I'm not huge fan of poetry slams just because I'm not really in the competitive side. I do go to them, just why not, you know. But there's judges. They judge how the poet does with their delivery, mainly delivery, and then also how the poem is, the structure of the words, the flow of the writing.
Express yourself.
Parker Pickett, a Ball State freshman with a passion for writing. He shared one of his poems recently before walking into a poetry slam at Two Cats Cafe in Muncie. Just ahead, talking with Mary Moore from the speech team on some great advice for when you've suddenly found yourself with a speaking invitation.
Express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
My name is Mary Moore. I'm the director of the speech team at Ball State University, and I'm an instructor of communication.
Do you think that speech teachers have a favorite among politicians or others who are speaking in public? Are there people that you'd say, oh, you got to catch this, or look for this on YouTube, or...
You know, I think, to me, what has really changed as far as the public speaking environment is the creation of TED Talks and the accessibility of TED and how frequently people watch those videos and their ability to, you know, take those messages. I mean, I would, you know, the idea of seeing a TED Talk live would be, you know, really enjoyable. But a lot of those, then they are spread on. But that's still different in a mediated format than, you know, face-to-face. But as far as, like, who would you look to as the pinnacle of what makes a good speaker? So for me personally, you know, when Barack Obama, you know, gave the eulogy in South Carolina after the horrible hate crime that happened, I think that is one of the most recent pieces of such a well-crafted presentation. But lots of political speech making is very complicated because you have a speech writer and then you have the speaker, and very few of us in outside of the political arena to have that opportunity where somebody constructs the presentation for us and they know us really well and then we, you know, deliver it. So, you know, I think there are lots of people who are very, very good at presentations. And I think it also depends on who they're trying to reach in that audience. You know, do they want to be the lively, energetic salesperson? Are they trying to be, you know, incredibly formal? It depends on the rhetorical situation, who matches what the needs are of the audience.
And you mentioned TED Talks. You wonder, well, wouldn't that work just as well as a paper? You know, just write your paper and let me read that. But it's not the same.
It's not the same. So part of what it is that I think that successful contemporary presentations involve story. And the humanity that is present in storytelling doesn't necessarily translate as well on paper. And it does because there are great stories written in paper. But when you were telling, especially the personal story, you know, the narrative, hearing it from one person who's had that experience really translates differently face to face. And I actually think most audiences, when they are exposed to somebody who's really good at presentations, it is so nice to hear because we crave it and really need to hear people's stories. And it doesn't necessarily translate the same if there is a mediated, you know, part of it. But a face-to-face, if I tell you my personal story and you hear it as I deliver the presentation, that has so much power to stay with you and resonate.
So I want to see if I can pull from you another pro tip. Your one pro tip was, hey, as our mom might say, be yourself. You know, don't mm-hmm. try to assume the character of a speaker. Just speak as you are. Another thing might be to weave some sort, make it personal, right?
Make it personal, absolutely. And not just for their audience. I mean, all audiences are egocentric, and it's even more so now. We want to know, like, why do I need this information? So no longer are the days where I could just provide you with data and you could just take that and leave. And instead, it's like, well, what do you offer that I couldn't read in a book? And often that is a story. And your personal story is usually the most compelling.
What if suddenly your phone rang and they said, well, you know, we'd like for you to speak tomorrow. What would you draw upon it?
I probably have quite a few questions about who my audience was and what the sort of occasion of the speech was. And then I think it's really important for you to talk about what you know. So be careful. You know, I think it's a horrible idea to talk about subjects that you don't care about and that you don't know very much about. That's where I think sometimes you find yourself in a bind because you then have to do so much research or you have to find out what it is that you're going to talk about that you can't really focus on connecting with your audience because you're making sure you get the right information. But if it's something that you know about, your expertise, that's one of the beauties of growing up is that, you know, you learn about things, then you should talk about what you know about. So I would imagine if the audience was very general and the occasion was very general, I would most likely talk about either I could talk about my experiences with being a speech coach and how much, you know, I have learned from being in this position and what a great opportunity that has been. Or I teach interpersonal communication in a course. And so I would probably use some of the material for that course because no matter where you are in life and what you do, I think we could all revisit some of those things that we wish we could do better. And then, you know, maybe have a time to reflect on what is it that I'm doing and how could I be better.
Which matters more, how well written a speech is or how it's delivered?
Well, I think that you have to have both. But a well-written speech that has delivery that gets in the way of that content is problematic. But a great delivered speech that is really vapid won't do much. So you have to have both. There's a certain bar that you have to reach in delivery. And delivery can make a good speech great. And if you have great content, but you never get better in the delivery, it will only be a good speech. So you can have good speeches or great speeches. And of course, we're all striving for great speeches here.
Is this true, what you hear sometimes, that people fear public speaking above all else, even death?
Yes.
Have you ever hear that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That, you know, some people would much rather be dead than give the eulogy at their presentation is what some comedians sort of suggest. Absolutely. It usually ranks in the top three of individuals' fears. And I would argue, and I would think, you know, some other scholars like Sherry Turkle would probably say it's only growing as we become more involved with our technology, that our fear with being face-to-face in a large group or one-on-one is, you know, it's continuing to grow as we become able to opt out of human, you know, human communication.
Suppose you had a CEO of some Fortune 500 company, and now they have to get up and talk. Is there a set of pro tips that you have for people who suddenly find themselves, hey, we need you to talk?
Yeah, I think that there is a level of authenticity that is expected. And so for many individuals, you know, they are playing a role in their mind when they get up to give a presentation. So they try to transform themselves. And that is actually probably not the best advice. Whoever you are, if you are a soft-spoken person or you're incredibly loud, that's probably who you're going to be as a speaker too. And it won't bother the audience. I mean, obviously, if you're soft-spoken, you're going to need to, you know, project. But the soft-spoken person who projects is loud, is, you know, is still going to be soft in comparison to somebody who's just, you know, loud by nature. So I think it's really important for you to be authentic. I also think you need to practice. So there's a lot of writing about how much time, you know, Martin Luther King spent on his Sunday
sermons.
And so I'm always like, if you aren't as good just naturally as Martin Luther King is, then you should be practicing more than he was. And even as a gifted speaker, he understood the importance of preparation.
That's something to remember. We're not born with this. You get better at it.
Absolutely.
Even a Martin Luther King.
Yeah, it is definitely a skill, and it's a muscle that you need to work and exercise, and you can improve it and get stronger and better.
Tell it like it is. Don't be ashamed. Let your conscience be your guide. But I know deep down inside of me.
Mary Moore, instructor of communication studies at Ball State University and director of the speech team. What was your takeaway? The part about how important practice is, how Martin Luther King would carefully hone his sermons and practice so diligently. I like the pro tips Mary had. Rule number one, as your mom might have said, be yourself. Don't take on the role of a speaker. Just talk about what you know and speak from the heart. By the way, a big thanks to all of our IPR members. If you'd like to support public radio, shows like Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Morning Musical, The Scene, Community Connection, and Indiana Weekend, or you're not sure if you're still a member, please give us a call or visit us. The website is indianapublicradio.org, and you can call us anytime. The phone number is 1-800-646-1812. 1-800-646-1812. Please honor us with your support, and as always, thanks for being part of the family at Indiana Public Radio. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft, and all the folks in the front office, including your friends Matt Bloom, Connie Clary, Lori Georgie, Emily Kowalski, Andrea Lutz, John Morgan, Angie Rapp, and Debbie Webb. Glad you could join us this time. Hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.